This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
Greetings, Free Talk Live listeners nationwide and online. I'm Gardner Goldsmith, here to begin our new connection of our Liberty Conspiracy and Free Talk Live Fridays. Get ready for this hour, Halloween style. Wayne McCroy, coming up.
I must try to mind meld with it. Eternity ends.
Our minds are converging, Doctor. Our minds are one. I feel what you feel. I know what you know.
I just love McCoy's face on that. Let's talk to our next guest. He is, of course, the man that you can find on Rockfin, digging so deep into the esoteric and the occult symbology of things, the events, the symbols on packages, the stories, the movies. He is Wayne McCroy. Wayne, great to see you again, man. How you doing?
Doing good, Guard. Glad to be speaking to you again here. Evil Spock approved.
Yes, I'll give you the old Vulcan symbol thing, which I guess is like an old Jewish thing. I don't know, but I guess Leonard Nimoy like opened his eyes at some Jewish ceremony. You saw some of the guys doing that. Thanks for joining us, man. And, you know, the subject for tonight is a fascinating one, but your show is always so fascinating. Tell people where they can find you.
Well, I just set up a brand new website, so everything's all centralized from there now. So it's www.alchemicaltechrevolution.com. So that should make it nice and easy for people to find me. So.
Well, I'm going to go searching for that right now, www.alchemicaltech.com. Let me see if I typed it right.
I'm
pretty bad. Hey! Oh, mate, I don't think I did it right.
No, it's alchemicaltechrevolution.com.
Oh, because I'm an idiot. There you go. Okay.
Yeah, it's up there. I have all the latest podcast episodes and everything are up on there. Links.
Oh, wow, this is gorgeous. Holy moly, look at this thing. Wow, dude, boy, you really went to town.
Yeah, it's been in the works for quite a while, so I have it all set up and good to go now, and I have links to everything there. So it's all good. So people can find my work there. And I do talk about the esoteric and the occult quite a bit because there's so much of that that goes on in our world that gets overlooked by people.
Well, what I like also is you're able to blend the breaking stories, the news stories in with such a depth of history that you know. And, you know, I've been in multiple people conversations with you, Billy Ray, Tony, and all the guys. And you come in with such stuff and you see things that the only other person I've seen who can do this is the esoteric detective Ed from New Zealand. And he's the guy who you're probably familiar with how he looked at the Pope's conference hall and realized it looked like a snake, both on the interior and exterior. And that got him a ton of traction on YouTube.
Right. I'm familiar with that. I never heard of him, actually, though. So that's I'll have to check out his work.
Yeah, he's still on YouTube, amazingly. He's got the Outer Light, and he also used to do the Outer Dark, and that's where he got a lot of traction with that video. And then he sort of went away for a little while, and he's back, and he's in New Zealand, and he just goes crazy with all the jab stuff and all that stuff. He's gone very, very underground. Like, he uses as untraceable tech as possible and stuff like that. Your website, alchemicaltechrevolution.com, Wayne. Awesome. How long have you been doing this, by the way, putting this information on the internet?
Well, I've actually, even though I've been researching these topics for a good part of my adult life now, I'm going on 20-some years of really deep research into a lot of this stuff. But publicly, I never really came out with anything public until 2017, when I published my first book and didn't start doing podcasting or anything of the sort until more recently than that. And honestly, I've only been doing this full time for a little under 2 years now. So it's really a lifetime's worth of research and putting it all together here. So, yeah, there's the links to my books. So that's another
thing. Epidemic of Pan, Breaking the Natural Order, The Alchemical Tech Revolution, Cybernetic Messiah, Autism Epidemic, and Autism AI and the Singularity. Oh, this is great. I hope we get some folks to check you out. And it's MCROY. And, of course, as we mentioned, they can head over to your new awesome website, Alchemical Tech Revolution. And you are also on Rockfin. And if people are interested and they like what you're doing, they can hit you up, drop you a tip, some cash donation, that sort of thing as well.
Absolutely. It's always much appreciated if they do so. They can find me on Rockfin, or I'm on Spotify or all the podcast platforms now, too.
Awesome. And I know you have paid subscriber capacity at your website, I see, right?
Yeah, people could go over there, and actually it's hosted through Spotify, so that's where they would be paying for the subscription links to, is through Spotify. So that's all set up and good to go, and cool. You can subscribe there, and I have how I actually work this is I have a free episode I publish every week, and then there's also a paid member episode that goes up every week. And I've also been running bonus episodes of my Alchemical Lantern live show that I do usually on Friday nights. Now that's going to be launching exclusive with Free World FM coming up very soon,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. And Bill has been working so hard on that.
Yeah, it's been a long time in the works, and they've encountered some different holdups along the way, but we're just about there. And I think we'll be launching within the next couple of weeks now.
That's going to be good. Hey, so Wayne, you know, I come at this as a person who's always enjoyed Halloween as a kid, you know, whether it was the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown or getting dressed up, telling spooky stories and stuff. And then as I got older, I sort of, you know, lost interest in Halloween and things. Then you start to hear about occultic roots of Halloween. You kind of heard about that as a kid. You say, oh, maybe some of the stuff I was scared about as a kid really actually has some ties to real things in history. I remember when I was a kid, I used to enjoy listening to Night on Bald Mountain, that sort of thing, you know. Can you tell us where there are some things to keep in mind about Halloween as far as its occultic roots, its esoteric roots, and things we might be seeing nowadays, the date, the symbology, that sort of stuff for folks?
Oh, absolutely. There's a rich history to what we celebrate as Halloween now. And, of course, it's known as All Hallows' Eve. And this was actually a holiday set up by the Christian church. I think it was sometime in the 16th century, I want to say, where they moved a celebration called All Saints Day from May 1st to November 1st. And there's connections there that go back into the occult as well and into the earlier mystery schools and a lot of the pagan religious ceremonial things that occur, because May 1st is a high holiday for many pagans. That's known as Beltane. And, of course, we have November 1st and, of course, October 31st, Halloween, how we knew it, we see it today, which is the eve of All Saints Day in the old Catholic Church. Well, we have this celebration going from the night to evening, going from October 31st into November 1st, that correlated back to a Celtic holiday called Samhain, and that's spelled like Samhain, S-A-M-H-A-I-N. It's pronounced Samhain, though, and that's an interesting thing, and that goes back to Celtic and Scottish language, and there's a whole mythology that goes along with this. So these are the origins of where our modern Halloween holiday come from. And it's got some dark undertones to it, if you want to go down that rabbit hole here.
Well, if you want to pick up any of those threads, go for it. And I'll just tell you, Wayne, Sam Hain, as the people would call it in the publishing industry and so on, Samhain Publishing was the company that offered me a contract for one of my novels, and I declined the contract because they wanted me to split my public political work from my writing name. And I said, well, I'm not going to do that. Why would I do that? And so I disconnected from them. And so I'm familiar with the terminology. You know, I did a little research, and I knew, you know, people had told me beforehand. So I'm glad I didn't connect with them.
Yeah. So, well, basically, Samhain, the word Samhain, it's derivative, the etymology of it. It simply means summer's end. So this was actually the New Year's celebration for the Celtic people. November 1st, they celebrated as the New Year, and this was going into what they called the dark season or the dark time. And in celebration thereof, they had some ritualistic type things that they had done at that point, because during this time, when we're going back, there was a king there named King Tigernmas, who wound up making offerings to a god called Crom Cruach in the old Celtic traditions here. So this Crom Cruach basically was a fertility and sun god, if you want to look at it from what our modern perspective would say, what the mainstream history community would say about it.
Wayne, right, so if I could, would these be considered druidic rituals or just Celtic, traditional Irish Celtic rituals? And in some cases, there were Celtic peoples even in the Midlands up to northern England.
Right. Well, this crossed the bounds of Ireland, Scotland, all of the northern regions there. And it did permeate into the larger culture, but it did start as druidic rites. So they had this god that they venerated called Crom Cruach. And every Samhain, that would be Halloween, they would sacrifice one of the firstborn children of the community to this god by bashing their head against a stone idol of the god. And that's where we actually get this notion of the jack-o'-lantern from, because these families who would sacrifice their firstborn children to this god for a fair harvest in the upcoming year, they would carve out, originally it was a turnip, they would carve out a face on a turnip and make a lantern out of it. And this is where the jack-o'-lantern symbol comes from. And that's why we carve pumpkins today. So they would set that out on their stoop so that the spirits, the wandering spirits that serve this god, Crom Cruach, would pass by their house and, you know, give favor to their family and to their farmlands and their works during that time, because they did sacrifice their child to Crom Cruach.
Do you have any idea on when they stopped the murderous practice? I don't know.
No, that's open for debate. I mean, I know that a lot of that dates back to 16th century texts and stuff where they talk about that. So, I mean, it goes back a long time. And there's more explanations as to this, because during this time of year, this New Year's celebration going into the dark time, of course, this always aligns with like the solstices and equinoxes and things like that. So this was going into the fall. So this was a celebration. This is where they split off their New Year in that tradition. So the New Year started with the dark time, or the dark season, as they like to call it, the dark period. And they would make these sacrifices to ensure a plentiful bounty come the light times, which started on May 1st, that Beltane, the other side of that. So that was celebrating the birth of summer and the death of summer, pretty much, in their system. So they had this tradition that during this time, during this one day of Samhain and the also Beltane, they say similar things about it, this is where the veil between our world and the spirit world becomes very thin. And they had a tradition that sometimes the ghosts or spirits of their dead relatives could come back to visit and offer either, you know, some beneficial type of an energetic principle to their homes, or if they had some type of a grudge against somebody, they could seek their revenge in this way. So during this time, what the tradition was is that you had wandering spirits around. And in order to scare off or confuse these wandering spirits or to not make them recognize you, they would put on costumes or disguises or masks, and that's where we get the tradition of dressing up. So we have all of these different connections that go back to this.
Do you know whether or not, for example, if you take something like the Wicker Man or some of the symbology that Alison Goldfrapp has put forward or some of the folk horror things where they would combine human elements and animal elements, you know, a buck or an owl's head, that sort of thing, for the masks. Is that part of it? Would that be kind of one of the mask things, or do you have any idea what the masks would be, or is it really just any kind of mask?
Well, the whole history of the mask even goes back even further than this. There's a lot there, and that's a whole other show. But at any rate, yeah, we have essentially what the tradition holds during this Druidic-type celebration or Celtic celebration, because it later became popularly celebrated throughout all the culture there. And, of course, we have it still today in a transformed type of a state, but it's still basically the same things. They would put on these masks or these costumes in order to confuse the spirits so that they wouldn't recognize them. So if they had, like, say, a malevolent spirit coming back from the dead to try to harm them in some way or seek their revenge, they wouldn't recognize the person. So they would dress up this way, and they would wander around, and oftentimes they would sing songs, and they would go about collecting for, like, food and stuff like that for the Samhain celebration. For the community Samhain celebration. So they would go door to door collecting food, and that's where we get the tradition of going door to door and saying trick or treat and collecting candy. And of course, later on, it developed into this whole thing where they would pull pranks on people if they didn't make their donation to the celebration. So we have all those traditions come directly from this. And like I said, I mean, there's kind of some dark undertones to a lot of it. People don't realize it. I mean, a lot of people think it's a harmless holiday. Okay, it's fun. But it crosses over with a lot of other things. It crosses over with this All Saints Day that we talked about earlier, because what that is that's a day that the Catholic Church celebrated the death of the saints. And we have, like, Dia de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead celebrations. That all crosses over. It's the same basic premise where the spirits of your dead relatives from the past can actually, because the veil is thin on that day, they can actually manifest in some way. And some traditions, some people still will, like, set a place at the table for this dead relative or something like that. And these traditions date back to this in particular, this celebration of Samhain in particular by the Celts. And actually, you can probably trace it back further than that, because there's a lot of this that ties back to some of the old Saturnalian-type doctrines and things that they did way back when. I haven't found, like, the direct connection to the Druids or the Celts from that, but it's got to be there somewhere. And when I find it, I'll let you know. But we have all these celebrations that derive from the same type of manifestation of spirit in certain ways. So even if it crosses time and culture, what we have now, it's kind of the same thing, a package deal together. So we celebrate this stuff not knowing the roots of it, and the roots of it are kind of dark.
Wayne, our guest, folks, is Wayne McRoy, and you can find the new website, Alchemical Tech Revolution, and, of course, find Wayne under his name, Wayne McRoy, on Rockfin. And you can head over from the alchemicaltechrevolution.com website to check out all the links, the books, all these things. Absolutely fascinating stuff, Wayne. And by the way, it's great to see you. It's really good to see you, dude. I really appreciate you being here.
Yeah, man. I appreciate you having me on. It's been a while. We haven't talked in a bit. And I know there's different reasons for that. But, yeah, it's all good,
man. Oh, that's awesome, man. And let me ask you, you know, when you talk about the Druidic, I remember doing some research for a book that I based in Bath, England. And as you know, the Druids were originally the ones who settled in the Bath area. They looked at the waters as being healing waters. There was this whole legend about a prince who had leprosy, went to Bath, England, and rolled around in the mud like the pigs did because he saw the pigs that were healing up in the mud, and his leprosy got cured. And then the Romans came in. And they put there was already a Druidic cultic connection. They replaced the Druidic cultic connection in Bath with their own temple to Minerva, I think. And they created the Druidic hot spas. And then when the Romans left, the British kings would go there and recreate and so on and so forth. And so I placed a story there, and I did a lot of research on the Druids, and I found out, you know, the title is Men of the Oak, I think, for the Druids or something like that. And I'm fascinated because I know that the Druids held on to a lot of the old learning, like Euclidean geometry and things like that. Do you think that that was because of their interest in alchemical stuff and, they got interested in that as it was brought up? Or were there other reasons for that? And also, if you want to attach this, did they sacrifice the children at that time because they thought that in addition to the end of the summer season going into the darkness, but it went parallel to that idea that the film between our world and the nether world was thinnest then, and that's why they did it? I know it's a lot of questions, but, whatever you want to address.
Yeah, that certainly seems to be the case. When the veil is thin, that's when these types of ceremonies or these types of things that they do in those cases, they have more efficacy according to those people who claim to know stuff about this, stuff about the occult and magic and all of these things that interconnect. And of course, we have all of these connections within the various secret society groups, and it's no different with the Druids. They were in and of themselves their own type of secret society group, and they still exist today. Just so you know, the queen, who just passed away, when was it, a year or two ago now? I guess it's been that long already. Well, she was actually initiated into their order. I have the pictures of it. I've posted it before on Facebook and stuff like that. There's a picture of her being initiated by the Grand Druid. So we have these traditions, and a lot of them have many of these same teachings at the core. So like Euclidean geometry and stuff like that, like you said, this all ties back to some of the ancient mystery schools, the teachings and stuff that they brought forward, the secret teachings, if you will, the secret doctrine of these various groups who claim to have hidden knowledge the rest of us don't know about and claim to use these things in certain ways.
Thanks for joining us on Liberty Conspiracy at Free Talk Live. We convene the conspiracy at Rockfin, Rumble, and my Twitter at Guard Goldsmith every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. Spread the word. We'll be back.
Always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.
U.S. USA News update. In Maine, law enforcement is actively pursuing more than 500 leads and tips in their ongoing search for Robert Card. The 40-year-old Army reservist is accused of allegedly killing 18 individuals and injuring more than a dozen during a shooting at a bowling alley and bar in Lewiston, Maine. The United Auto Workers Union and GM are potentially edging toward a labor agreement. According to CNBC, discussions have persisted through Thursday night into Friday. The proposed deal would be modeled after the tentative agreement recently struck with Ford. Donald Trump and his three adult children are slated to give testimony in his New York civil fraud trial. Donald Trump Jr. is set to testify on November 1st, followed by Eric and Ivanka Trump. The former president is scheduled to testify on November 6th. They face allegations of artificially inflating their assets to secure more favorable loan conditions. Trump has denied any wrongdoing. John Schaefer, USA News.
What if Extendivite really works, but you find that hard to believe and you spend precious time looking for someone to say, just try it? I have my help today because of Extendivite, and if I did not take a leap of faith and try it, well, I would be on disability today. Take one bottle of Extendivite as suggested for 60 days to find out for yourself. No need to stop any other meds you may be on. You know by now that they are not working for you. Before the 60 days are up, I know that you will feel Extendivite working for you and will want to take another bottle. Life is too short. Get your Extendivite today. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
I'm Ben Utek. I played high school, college, and pro football, helping my team win the 2006 championship. It was an amazing day, but it can't compare to the joy I feel every day with my loving wife and three beautiful daughters. My football career ended after I suffered my fifth concussion. Did you know that over 1 million athletes suffer a concussion each year? That includes boys and girls, every age, every type and level of sport. It isn't always clear that a player has had a concussion, so parents, athletes, and coaches need to learn about concussion signs and symptoms. The American Academy of Neurology recommends athletes thought to have a concussion be immediately removed from play and not returned until assessed by a healthcare professional trained in concussion. This isn't just about sports. It's about your brain. When in doubt, sit it out. Learn more at aan.com/concussion. That's aan.com/concussion. A message from the American Academy of Neurology.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
Talk Live continues with Liberty Conspiracy and our guest, Wayne McCroy.
This all ties back to some of the ancient mystery schools, the teachings and stuff that they brought forward. The secret teachings, if you will, the secret doctrine of these various groups who claim to have hidden knowledge the rest of us don't know about and claim to use these things in certain ways. So these are core tenets to all of it, and they're all interconnected in some way. So that's why even said, I mean, the Druids, it's this separate type of geographical area, but yet they still have some of the same core tenets and hallmarks and teachings of other secret society groups that have emerged throughout the different parts of the world. And it ties back to this mystery school connotation being involved with it, because you had a secret priestcraft that practiced all these different mythological archetypes in different ways, had external or exoteric worship of certain gods, but behind that was the secret teachings that they had, and they all venerated the same things and did the same things. So very much of the time, the reasons that they do this kind of stuff are probably far different than what the public did this stuff for. And that's and the important thing to keep in mind.
Well, same way, and it's interesting because you mentioned the exoteric and the esoteric, and there were certain periods in British history when some of those things sort of crossed. You got that guy Gardner, who was very involved in the occult at the turn of the century, involved with the royal family, the queen. You've got Madame Blavatsky. You've got the Theosophy movement. You've got Aleister Crowley. You've got the spy rings that come off of that and then come over to the United States. You got the end of the British Empire. And it's absolutely fascinating when you think of things like, you know, we talked about Euclidean geometry, and I mentioned maybe a week ago, I was talking about how the film Wizard of Oz, L. Frank Baum was a theosophist, and he not only had a lot of messages in there about whether they were going to have a gold standard or a silver standard in the book and so on and so forth, but if you watch the movie, you'll see at the end when the wizard gives the scarecrow his diploma, the scarecrow points at his head, and he recites the Pythagorean theorem. And Pythagoras was very much into Egyptian alchemical occultism. Then, and Plato picked up on that with his idea of the people having certain types of elements in their system, and the blood that was lead or, you know, bronze or gold, and the ideal city-state being run by the philosopher kings. He was a massive fan of the Euclidean geometry and of Pythagoras, who himself had been heavily influenced by the Egyptian alchemical movement, right?
Oh, yeah. All these things tie together. And you'll notice that the city in The Wizard of Oz is the Emerald City. Well, what color is the emerald? It's green, right?
Yeah.
Emeralds are green. Well, that is a cue right there. That's an esoteric sign by Frank Baum. The
it's green. Not just because of the dollar? The green?
No. No,
oh,
there's
I didn't
no
know that.
It's the green language. That's what the Freemasons call it. It's called the language of the birds. It's the phonetic Kabbalah. It's the secret language of the elite of these secret society groups. So he's telling you in no uncertain terms, my movie, my book is loaded with symbology if you have but eyes to see. So that's what that is. It's the hidden communication system that the secret society groups use to communicate with one another. It's called the green language. Go ahead and research that if you've never looked into that, Gard. It's a fascinating subject. I've looked at this stuff for many years, and that's how I am able to pick up on a lot of this symbology and stuff that most people don't see because of that. If you understand that, then you have the codex for translating their language. So, yeah, and by the way, Oz is referring to Osiris, if you were wondering about the Egyptian connection there. That's what Oz is really referencing. So the Wizard of Osiris, and of course, who was the Wizard of Osiris? If you look back, who was the practitioner of magic in Egypt that was heavily revered? Well, that's Isis. So you have the Isis, Osiris, Horus myth already being entangled there. And, of course, Pythagoras was a very hugely influential figure throughout all of these secret society groups. He was one of the highest initiates, and some say he was concurrent with who is called, in some traditions, Hermes Trismegistus. So you
so
have
a heavy hermetic thing going right through Greek philosophy right on in.
Absolutely. It's all interconnected, and so much so, Pythagoras being such an important figure. Somebody a little bit closer to modern times, a Rosicrucian fellow named Dr. Reuben Swinburne Clymer, his official title within some of these occult fraternities, within the quote-unquote Illuminati, and they are a real thing, he was called Pythagoras 38. That was the title he took on, Pythagoras 38. So many people are unaware of this stuff, but absolutely the Illuminati as a group does exist. They use different names at different times. But I have actual books that say Temple of the Illuminati on the cover, and they were written, and they were in connection with the Rosicrucian Brotherhoods, various ones of the secret society groups. So they're acknowledged to exist today still.
Wayne McCroy is our guest, folks. Again, go to Alchemical Tech Revolution if you're watching this after the fact, if you're watching live. Go to some live questions in just a minute if it's okay with you, Wayne. Would that be all right?
Yeah, I'm cool with that.
Great, man. Listen, you know, I know, you know, we use the Halloween date to be able to open up this Pandora's box in a way to look at these things. How you keep track of these things and allow for a through line when so many things run parallel and you can hop from one to the other, and yet you make it so interesting and so linear. I'm wondering, you know, you mentioned the green thing and the green language. Am I fishing when I think about the legend of King Arthur, and was it Sir Gawain and the Green Knight? Was that the, because I know they just did a movie recently where they redid that, and I know that Tolkien did a retelling of the Green Knight. Was it Sir Gawain and the Green Knight?
I believe it was. That sounds familiar. Sir Gawain, the Green Knight. Yeah, you'll notice they always have that green connection to a lot of these things. Why do you think it's called the Green Movement here now, too? I mean, this is certainly, there's an environmental factor, of course, but you see, they use this type of subtle nuance, this use of archetype. This is something that resonates with the unconscious human mind. You don't pick up on it consciously, but it has a very real effect on your forward behaviors, on your subconscious behaviors. So these things, they utilize these principles all the time. So words have power, and they have inherent meanings behind them that oftentimes people don't recognize on the surface. And this is what is the difference between exoteric and esoteric. So right. You see something like that, and certainly you could pick up the nuance there, and probably Frank Baum was putting it in there with about the dollar and the gold and silver standard. All of that is interlaced with it, but that's only the exoteric version of what's being said. There's a deeper meaning behind it, and that's how a lot of these people operate. They have layers of meaning for all these different symbols, and depending upon your level of initiation into their secret brotherhoods is dependent upon how much of it you could pick up on, or how much of this stuff you've studied is how much you can pick up on.
Boy, this is unbelievable. Let's head over to Rockfin Chat, see what's hanging out there. Chris Graves is there, and let's see. I want to just see on the comments. Brian Taylor, Pythagoras triangle represents the Freemason Trinity. He says a square represents Osiris B square. There's a B there. I'm not sure if I'm reading this right, Brian, so pardon me. Represents Isis. Oh, A square represents Osiris. B square represents Isis. And C square represents Horus. I've never heard that. That's fascinating.
Yeah, that's like the Holy Trinity if you go back to the Egyptian mythology there. It represents all of these different archetypes, like across the board. So depending upon what's your religious system that you use, this is why the Freemasons use this, because they can transcend different religious systems or mythological systems with it. It represents the same thing across the board in all these different traditions. So that's representative of the Trinity, essentially, if you go back to the Egyptian mythos. And this is where a lot of the experts in this stuff claim that the mystery schools found their perfection in the Egyptian forum that they had, the Egyptian mythos, where all of the different archetypes were represented in pretty much almost perfect form there. So they have all of these archetypes attached here. And that's what mythological stories and stuff are all about. It's about attaching these archetypes or ideas to these stories so that we can understand them. Because sometimes a lot of the symbolism there, well, it really can't be described adequately enough with words. So that's why they use symbols and they use stories to get across a point to the human being, because it resonates with us. It's something archetypal, inherent in our psyches. So that's one of these things, and that's why that triangle, the Pythagorean triangle, has been used as a symbol for that very thing for many, many thousands of years now. It's the same type of archetype at play. So they could use it in different ways to represent different things. And of course, there's that nuance and subtle meaning behind it there, too. So you could trace it back to that. A lot of the Freemasons and the various mystery school groups, the secret society groups, like to trace things back to the Egyptian mythology, because that kind of gives them a similar base to work from. That way they all kind of know what was going on in the Egyptian system. That's why they put such emphasis on the Egyptian mythos. That's why out of all of the different cultural groups in the world, there's only Egyptology that has its own science. Did you ever wonder why that is?
Yeah.
Well, it's because these mystery schools and these secret occult fraternities, they use this as a reference point for everything. And I could tell you another thing, I shouldn't say everything, but a lot of what we've been handed by Egyptologists Well, it's not telling you the truth.
That's just where I was going to go. You know, you immediately got me thinking of my visits to the British Museum and the movement to get those materials out of Egypt, show certain things, hide other things. So do you think there have been a lot of forces behind what was recovered, what was shown, and the stories that were told to people about what was shown?
Well, yeah, this all ties back to who's running the place here. I like to tell people that at the very tippy top of the power structure in this world, there are dark occultists who run things, and I certainly still believe that, and I will maintain that because it's demonstrable. You see all the ways that the occult is leveraged throughout society, and there's this same small power group that's been controlling things from behind the veil for a long, long time now. And, of course, they want to keep certain things hidden from the public because they view us all as the profane. That's what they call us. If you're not an initiate in their one of their secret orders, well, you're nothing. You're little more than livestock to them, and you're profane, and you don't deserve to know the secrets, and they don't want you to know the secrets because their viewpoint is you're cattle to be manipulated how they see fit. If you're not initiated into one of their secret society groups, you don't even have a soul, according to some of their belief systems. So,
I'm curious, Wayne. I have a couple questions, but the first one, okay, so I'll ask this one, just, you know, random here, of the two. People looking at Halloween now, what would you like to tell those people if they've got kids, if they might be going to Halloween parties and things like that, to view regarding their own spirit, what they might be buying into, what they might be contributing to? How do you look at this as far as the metaphysical goes and what people could actually be dabbling in without even realizing it?
Well, I would just advise people go back and look at the Bible. It says, "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against spiritual powers of wickedness in high places." So that's essentially what it is. I mean, we have this spiritual connotation attached to all of it. And whether you believe this stuff or not is irrelevant, really. Even if you think it's utter nonsense, what you need to understand is there are people in this world who very much believe in these principles and these things I'm talking about. And the things they do to act upon their beliefs in them will affect all of us. So it's important that you understand what is their motivation, what's their modus operandi, how and why do they do the things they do. And this is part and parcel of that. So even if you don't buy into the spirit realm of things, which I think if you don't, I think you need to do a little more self-introspection on that part. But that's my opinion. So even if you don't buy into any of that, though, you still need to understand there's people in positions of power in this world that very much do, and they will do things acting on their beliefs that affect us all. So that's the
okay. I'm going to hop back in and place your questions in Rockford and Rumble for Wayne McCroy, folks. And Brian's got a couple other points here and a question, I think, over in Rockfin. After he talked about the square of A, square of B, square C, with all this Israel stuff going on, has Wayne looked into the Talmud? To me, it seems to be the Jewish interpretation of the mysteries. And then he has another question about Thomas Paine.
Okay,
we'll talk about Thomas Paine next.
Addressing the Talmud, you have to realize the Talmud was written largely based upon Kabbalic principles of Kabbalah, which is known as the Jewish mysticism in some circles. But it actually goes way deeper than that because there are different forms of Kabbalah, and most people are completely unaware of that. And, of course, we're talking about Kabbalah here spelled with a K. And the spelling's important, too, just for everybody out there to understand. So this is referencing back to the Kabbalah spelled with a K, which in the Hebrew means tradition. And this ties directly into the Talmud. So you do have a lot of these mystic interpretations being actually presented there in almost exoteric type form in many ways. So this is something that most people completely missed the point on. It always ties back to these occult principles with all of this stuff. So, yes, the Talmud, there is a connection there. And with all the stuff going on today in Israel, I don't claim to have all the answers to all of that. All I'm saying is just keep your eyes on the situation and don't believe what the media is telling you 100% with that either.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, Brian's next question He says, does Thomas Paine, and these are great, Brian, awesome, and a great, great person to bring up. Does Thomas Paine have a connection to the mysteries? He seems to use the term profane a lot in his work, The Age of Reason. You have any thoughts on that?
I haven't done much investigation into Thomas Paine's background, but if he uses the word profane quite heavily, well, I would say there's probably a very good chance he has some association with some occult fraternity, and most likely the Freemasons. So let's put it that way.
Interesting, because Brian adds, specifically, Paine calls the Bible profane. If it is the Bible he calls profane, then who is his God, because he seems to believe in a God? Is it the God of the mysteries? Interesting. So we'll leave that
very well. Yeah, very well. I can't claim to know, but, the God of the mysteries, well, depending upon who you listen to within the mysteries, they'll tell you this could be different forces or different things, but a lot of times the name Lucifer comes up at the topmost levels of these places.
The Lightbringer.
Yep.
And by the way, I want to thank Rick XRP, who tipped $10 over on Rockfin. Rick, thank you. You rock, man. You rock. And if anybody has any further questions, continue, please do so. And I'm just going to go scroll down to the bottom, Wayne. You know how it goes. Now, I've got a question for you in your personal development, Wayne. You have such a depth of knowledge and breadth of knowledge, right? Was there a time that you recall when you first started to get interested in investigating these things? What drove you to this? You know, I talked about the past, number of days, spooky stories, scary stories that inspired people. But as an adult now, I'm trying to utilize the appreciation for the scary stories to recognize that they're just stories told by people. But sometimes they can connect with us to make us realize that there's something beyond the physical. And if we walk the right path towards Christianity, then we can understand where all of the physical came from. If we wander just for the sake of titillation, or because we like the spookiness, we like the themes or whatever, or we're unaware of what we're searching for, or what we're encountering as we search, we can run into some problems. What was it that inspired you? Was it a series of stories? Were you into horror stuff as a kid? Was it an event in your life, looking at the course of history, that made you realize there's a lot connected that goes way back and these forces really exist?
Well, I've always, since I've been a young child, I've always been fascinated with the paranormal or the supernatural, especially the subject of UFOs. And that's largely where I started my research in adult life with this stuff, when I started really deep diving into that. I have had some very strange paranormal encounters and experiences through the years, which kind of piqued my curiosity, but it wasn't until around 2006 or so that I really started delving very deeply into many of these subjects. And it started with the UFO phenomenon for me. It's always been something that's fascinated me. I have seen some UFOs myself in the past, and I had an encounter with one in 2006 that really sent me searching. And then kind of doubling down on that, saw some things arise several years later with my child developing autism and all the things surrounding that that got me delving deep into the roots of the medical system and stuff like that as well. And wouldn't you know, every time you go exploring down the paths of any of these types of conspiracy type topics, you always inherently land in one of two places, and it's both. One will be in the extreme ancient antique past, where you always find the occult, and the other end of the spectrum is always in the future, the very near future, right within our reach, where you find the philosophy of transhumanism, and they interconnect. And that is largely what inspired me to start going down this path here and really doing the deep research, because I found this connection. Our modern sciences and technologies and the end game they have in mind with them, transhumanism, their roots lie back in ancient alchemy and the ancient mystery schools, in occultism. And they're interconnected in this way, and they've brought forward some of the hermetic principles and the old antiquated, I guess you would call, the old sciences. I don't see them as antiquated. They're probably more accurate than our modern science. But the old alchemical or natural sciences, you go back and you look at that, and now we're beginning to see where a lot of this jives with our knowledge base today. And a perfect example as to where you can find this tie would be with Walter Russell's work. Go and look at Walter Russell. He explains a lot of these things about modern science that don't align with what our modern theories are right now. But if you go back and you look and you see how it melds together with some of the ancient belief systems, you'll see there's a definite framework there that seems like to be more of an accurate description of things than what our modern systems would explain them as.
So can you repeat his name for the audience one more time?
Walter Russell. Go look up Walter Russell.
Wayne, I got to say, you know, it's very interesting. We often are flooded with contemporary stories, breaking stories and things like that. And they introduce the ideas of forces. I was talking about the thesis of, you know, this colonization thing and how the state actually colonizes our lives. And that is in the day-to-day, person-to-person thing. But what we're also seeing here, this might be one of the most important conversations I've had in months. I just want to tell you. And I really appreciate you coming on, Wayne, because it allows us to see that while we're dealing with these day-to-day forces, we can see that there is a dark and very, very long history, whether it's people who are effectuated by these beliefs or it's people who are working within a system that has been molded and shaped by people with these beliefs. It is constantly attacking our free will and our soul. Am I wrong?
No, you're spot on. That's exactly what it's about. It's about collectivism, formerly known as communism on the political spectrum, but now they'll refer to it as communitarianism or collectivism or some such thing or socialism, pickinism.
Yeah.
That's what this is all about. It's about this collective mindset, this Borg mind mentality.
Got one more segment chatting with our expert on the occult, Wayne McCroy, here on the Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Thanks for being part of the conspiracy for freedom. Because freedom is out of fashion nowadays.
This is an urgent warning. America is heading for another major financial disaster at an alarming rate. We could see stock prices fall as much as 50%, but this time the crash could be more violent and come faster than you ever imagined. We are Advantage Gold, America's most trusted precious metals company, and we are here to sound the alarm that winter is coming for investors. And now is the time to take actions that may help protect and secure your portfolio with physical precious metals. Want to help protect your hard-earned money before it's too late? Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000 and request our free gold and silver survival kit today. Mention that you heard us on the radio and learn how you could get up to $1,000 in free silver coins. The number is 800-900-8000. Call now to get your free survival kit and see if you qualify for $1,000 in free silver today.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Check with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamgaday.com, and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your longevity business. Teamgaday.com. Teamgaday.com.